Voice of Reason Broadcast Network presents The Heretics Hour with Carolyn Yeager. Carolyn Yeager brings you news and commentary on Holocaust revisionism, World War II history, free speech issues, and more. And now, here's Carolyn.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another Heretics Hour. I'm Carolyn Yeager, and I have Gunter Deckert from Germany with me tonight. He has been my guest before, and he has some interesting and timely reports to share with us about nationalist activities in Europe. But first, I want to do a quick Elie Wiesel watch. The Weasel will be speaking in 1 hour, just as this program ends, to students at Chapman University in Orange, California. I hope some folks are there to inform the attendees of the hoax Mr. Weasel has played upon the world public for the last 60 years. I'll talk about that next week a little bit. Also note that the Weasel will be speaking at Cornell University in Ithaca, New York on this Thursday, April 29th. So you can check out the Weasel Watch at my website at carolynyeager.com for details. All right, I now turn to a totally different kind of human being, a real leader, the former leader of the NPD, the German National Democratic Party, a real nationalist party, Gunter Deckert. Welcome, Gunter. So glad to have you joining me.
Yes, thank you for calling me. Good evening.
Okay, good evening to you. Nice to have you here. Let's start out. I want to start out with the Bishop Williamson trial in Regensburg. You attended that trial, and you have written a report, and I got an advance copy of it, so I have read what you've written, a translated copy, and there's some very interesting stuff in it. I'm sure our listeners are familiar with the trial, and they have read about it, so we don't need the basic details. Just give us the highlights and your personal views, if you would, please.
Okay, first, it was a trial without the main accused. Bishop Williamson didn't appear before the court. And as we are accustomed to that kind of trials, it was a show trial. The lawyer of Bishop Williamson is in favor of this famous German Penal Code 130, incitement to racial hatred, etc., public uproar. And he even stated in public that he is in favor of this special law, which is only known in France, Austria, Switzerland, and Belgium. England and the Catholic Saints don't know a law like that. And therefore, the main topic, Auschwitz, wasn't talked about. It only was a problem if the bishop, who in Germany, near Regensburg, had given an interview to a Swedish camera team, led by a Swedish of Arab origin, a certain Elie Fagan, had committed a crime. So the interview was only to be watched in Sweden. The problem is, a foreigner, British citizen, but on German soil, gave an interview in English, meant to the Swedish public. The prosecutor and the judge, a woman judge in her late 30s, said it doesn't matter because Germans, some Germans, do understand English, and even they may get notice of this interview by Swedish relatives or friends. And in this way, the German Penal Code is valid, and even a foreign citizen could be judged by this special law.
You know, I read in your report that you say that the lawyer submitted an injunction with the district court. Well, no, that was the original lawyer. After
yes, lawyer before
said that.
Was
and then you said the key sentence of the ruling at that time, the original ruling, if there is no intent then criminal prosecution is not called for, and there is no need for a prompt action. Therefore, he did not seek legal recourse. Well, you know, there was no intent of Bishop Williamson to publicize this his views in Germany. And so shouldn't that right there change the whole case? But it has not. What do you say to that?
No, because the statement you mentioned was made in a civil case, not in a penal case one. And
okay.
The prosecutor and the judge ruled that if there is purpose, if you do something on purpose, in German it's Absicht, you want to do, you want to propagate, you want to inform, you want to teach, that is enough to get sentenced. That is a difference between the civil law, if there's no purpose, and it was not checked out by the judges at the Nuremberg court. But the prosecutor, as well as the judge at Regensburg court, said, well, there it was on purpose. He accepted the possibility that this interview in English might or could be watched and listened to in Germany as well. And that is enough to get even a foreigner into the prison.
All right. Well, so then what about his...
Somebody, if you, Karin, mentioned a sentence, let's say you are in favor of the theories of the revisionists, and that is transported, in between quotation marks, into Europe and into Germany, and Germans understand some English, and one day you come over again... You may
You're scaring me.
Yes, you may be arrested and in the prison. It was the case of Hans Schmidt. Maybe you have known of him. Hans Schmidt,
yes.
From Germany.
Yes.
Yes. When he came over to Germany, he was arrested because of having written a report in English and only published and circulated in the States.
You think they might be doing less of that now because there's more criticism of this law and they're becoming more sensitive?
Yes, there is some, let's say, elder judges from the National High Court, once they demission, are no longer in office, they criticize this special law, it's really a special one, but the problem is that the political power does not want to change. It even tries to, what do you call it in English, to make it, to enlarge it. So it happened last November. They added a new paragraph, this famous paragraph 130, even making it a crime, a real crime, which may lead you to prison. If you, let's say, stirs, or if you organize a campaign, a manifestation near a site that is regarded as, well, a holy one, because of its linking to, well, to the National Socialism, to a concentration camp, or anything like that. It got even worse in the last few months.
Yeah. Well, now, okay, thank you for that. So you also said in here that this attorney Krah, who is the attorney for the Pius X...
Brethren,
who was not too friendly toward, didn't speak too well of Bishop Williamson, tried to kind of marginalize him, that he said, well, you said you were going to try to find out what his political orientation is. Did you, have you found,
yes,
have
will,
you found that that has anything to do with it?
Well, based on his public appearance, first he is, let's say, paid by the presidentship of the Pius Brothers, or Pius Brethren. Mm-hmm. And therefore, his job was to get the Brethren out of the battle.
Right.
And to focus all the evil possible on this marginal figure of an eccentric British gentry people.
Yes, okay.
Williamson, a cultivated but somewhat typical British eccentric person who is a marginal, let's say, appearance in the whole brethrenship of the Pius Brothers.
Yeah.
It was, we call it in German, he tried to save the community of the Pius Brethren, at the same time in attacking Bishop Williamson and stating, well, he stands not for the Pius Brethren, but he is alone. He's a marginal figure, well, a queer British old-fashioned but cultivated and charming gentleman.
Yes, that's well, that's even the approach that his own lawyer is taking, isn't it, Lossman? I don't think did he pick that lawyer, or was Lossman chosen for
his
him?
His second lawyer came into, let's say, the ring of a boxing expression. I think by chance, but I think that this lawyer Lossman more or less has links with the Pierce brethren. But it's quite normal, because this lawyer Kra, the first one, mm-hmm. is from Bavaria and now working at Dresden, the capital of Saxony. And mm-hmm. this Lossmann lives in Upper Franconia, that is north of Nuremberg. And I don't know how they're cooking that. I think the two are in some way linked with the business of the Pierce brethren.
Okay. Now, I thought it was also interesting that they talked about his income, and the prosecutor said that Bishop's Williamson's income was 3,000
euros
a month. Plus, if he travels, he has expenses. I mean, he lives free; everything is free. And I thought that was outrageous. And but then later, his lawyer said it wasn't that high. How did he get away with saying that? Now the lawyer, Williamson's own lawyer, says it's 1,000 euros a month, which is even a little bit high for someone like him.
If Bishop Wilson stays at London at the home of the Pierce brethren there, he doesn't touch money for traveling.
Right.
The only regular income he has, apart from lodging and meals at the Pierce home at London, is 250 euros a month, pocket money.
Really? Where did 1,000 euros come from?
Yes, but I say, well, if he is on the way, he may get donations. I don't know where, from the heaven or from the hell, I don't know. He may get special donations. He may. I think it's a strange, a crazy calculation how to come to the income they wanted to get to the sum of 12,000 or 10,000 euros. It's crazy. I think that would be one of the points this special lawyer Lossmann will attack on the appeal. Because 300 euros income a month is crazy, is not proved.
Yes. You know, I noticed also this wording by this prosecutor. The same old, this word pathological. You have him quoted as saying that people like Williamson have a pathological compulsion to spread mistaken and prescribed opinions. Therefore, he is guilty on all points. That was in his summation, I guess.
Yes, yes. They say, lawyer Kras said, Bishop William is, I know the bishop in person, he's really, well, a personality, a cultivated gentleman, old English style, who has read a lot. And they, well, that, and they even stated, if he thinks that something is right, it's his way always to tell the truth. And the brother says, well, this is typical for those people. They have got a kind of defect. They think they must communicate what they think is right. But in a normal democratic society, everybody, in my mind, has got the right to say his opinion. And only the discussion lives by argument and counter-argument. In Germany, there's no argumentation. It's only a law. You may compare with the laws of the Catholic Church in the Middle Ages. Either you believe, okay, if not, into prison. Or you pay a big fine.
Yes, now, the judge, who, you know, appears in they try to put on an appearance that they're fair-minded, that they're concerned with finding, you know, with doing justice and so on. But then the verdict is always predictable and the same. And also said, you have her here saying that the Holocaust, in her explaining her verdict, that the Holocaust is an acknowledged fact. And
historical fact, yes.
By the highest court. The number of victims have been established by the highest court.
Which
what court is
wrong?
Is that?
Which is wrong. We have got
two high levels.
There's no ruling up to the present time by the so-called German Constitutional Court, which is responsible for the, what they call the common law, the Grundgesetz. The judge only refers to rulings of the court who checks the appeals of the normal penal courts. And that is wrong what you said. The chairman will say, High Communal Court, at the present, has never ruled about 130. And though she is wrong, and I will write her that she is wrong.
Good for you. Well, do you think that there will be an appeal?
Yeah. I read on the side of the homepage of Bishop Wilson that he is going to appeal, but I think the last decision will be made by the bosses of the Pierce Brethren, who are not in favor of him. They want to calm down the whole affair. They want to get out of the mainstream media. And there's a constant attack on the Catholic Church as a whole, on the German Pope, and Schur, who is a conservative, and the Pierce Brethren are more than conservative, and it's part of a fight, a struggle to get, to make the Catholic Church lose the battle.
Okay. Well, let's move on, because I want to ask you about what you mentioned to me, that you still have some jail time to serve, or you...
yes.
And it was very interesting, so please tell us all about that.
A couple of years ago, when I was asked to stand for the mayorship of Nuremberg in Franconia, the true boss, who is only half Jew because his mother was a normal German woman, wife of German blood, though he's no Jew in the Jewish world they thinking, titled me in public as a criminal because having denied the Holocaust. And then I put charge against him, and in my charge I used the expression Rassegenossen, which in English might be translated, but it's not there, as racial or the comrades of race. And this expression Rassegenossen, I was told, had always been used by the National Socialist Government. And there we see the link, Rassegenossen today, once used in the Third Reich, is a crime. And therefore I was accused, and I was sentenced 5,600 euros to be paid at a monthly rate at 100 euros. And as I had pretended that I had not paid one rate a month, the month of March, there are some, days left, and then I should go to prison on Monday to come. But I protested, stating that I have always paid the rates demanded by me, but I even am ready to, spend some days, maybe a week, maybe 10 days, in what I call a state monastery, to read in quiet some books, and I have not got the time at home, because I was too busy.
Well, really? I wouldn't pay it. I would go and stay at that place.
Why not?
How much of this 5,600 euros have you already paid, or did you not pay?
Yes, I have paid so far. The money left is about 900 euros.
So you have paid all that. Now,
man... It goes back to 2001, you see, 2001.
Yeah.
And there are 250... euros left, which means 10 days of prison. Yes, the other money, I can't go into prison because it's what I get, the charges for the court. But I was fined, there's a difference. One part, the charges of the court, of the lawyers, and another part, the fine. And on this fine are left 250 euros. That means 10 days of prison. I will do maybe 5 days or 6 days. That depends. I want to do that in that late autumn, November, when it's dark and gray outside. But I'll see. No, anyway, if you have made 5 years in prison, 10 days is really nothing.
Really, really.
And yeah, I know, and I know how it works.
Yes.
And thus they don't think that a person by his or on his free will will go again into prison. But well, 10 days is nothing. Once in, I will or already be out.
Yes. Well, I hope it all works out well for you. Oh, I think people do not understand how many Germans are dealing with this legal problem. We only hear about the big, well-known cases. And it's just, I was very surprised to see that you had more charges against you and you were still dealing with this.
Karen,
Why should you not be able to call someone a racial comrade when they call you a criminal? Of course we know. All right, I want to move on.
Because this expression was also used in the Third Reich, and everything problem you use again, you are in favor of the Third Reich, and that is, based on German law, a crime.
Yes, that's and why the vocabulary has been so changed. Yeah.
Which is crazy and strange, but that is the Germany of today. Well, the smaller Germany of today with crazy people at power.
Yes. All right. I let you know about an article that I thought was very interesting that I came across in the Jewish Tribune. It was written kind of more of an opinion piece by a professor emeritus at Waterloo University in Canada by the name of Arnold Ages. Naturally, he is Jewish, and it is about what he considers a disturbing development in German Holocaust revisionism, and he speaks of four distinct kinds of Holocaust revisionism. The first is the normal one, which he calls obscene, which is the Ernstendel type of just categorical denial. The second he calls, he says that which is endorsed by the historian Ernst Nolte, who's a German historian, kind of middle guy, who observes that the communists murdered more people than the Nazis did, thus suggesting that the Holocaust should be viewed in a wider moral perspective. Mm-hmm. Now, the third kind of revisionism, he says, is that which says that, that the Germans were dealing with more than just the Holocaust during World War II, that there was a much wider agenda, like the war, and it behooves German historians to concentrate on those other sectors. Now, this is pretty interesting that they think, you know, that they really will argue that the Holocaust is really the central issue because it was so unique and the unspeakable crimes and so on. But then the thing is, he goes to the fourth one, which is what interests me. And the reason I'm going through this is because it is showing me that, and I've seen this before, that they are really concerned about about damage to their Holocaust through looking at Germans in a different prism, or looking at Germans in a different way, and releasing them to some extent because of their own suffering. What they really are afraid of is any talk about German suffering. So the fourth expression that he says is the most powerful revisionist of pathology, there's that word again, is to reduce the impact by pointing out that almost an equal number of Germans died in defending the homeland, pointing out the immense suffering of the German people during the Allied bombings, as well as the deportation of millions of Volksdeutsch after the war. So, you know, he says that the guilt is being dissipated in the world. The Holocaust guilt is being dissipated, and they're very, very concerned about this growing threat to their Holocaust.
Yes,
and I think my point that I want to make before I let you talk is that this is what we should be putting plenty of attention on and talking a lot about what happened to the Germans, because it has been, you know, in the shadows. It's just now coming out more and more.
Yes, that the Jews are afraid of losing their uniqueness or singularity, the unique suffering. They are the only ones who had suffered during World War II. And based let's say, on the long time after at the end of World War II. New generations are here, and they are fed up with this pointing to the holo, the holo, the holo, and the holo being, let's say, the raison d'être, the pure reason of the German state after the war. And there are now young historians and even young teachers who try to focus, but there are problems for them if they go too far. Now, that is only part of it, or as Le Pen put it, that is a detail of World War II.
Okay, I'm going to have to stop you there on this, Gunter, because we need to take our break now, and we can't avoid that. So, listeners, please stay with us, and we will be back in just a few minutes.
Okay. See you later.
We'll be right back with more on the Heretics Hour. You're listening to VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Are working on how to reverse the country's flagging image in Muslim nations. President Obama's election brought a welcome surge in popularity, but that reputation's on the slide as the unwelcome wars in Iraq and Afghanistan continue. RT's Lauren Lister has more.
A message from the U.S.
Yes.
Delivered to Afghanistan in this form.
Four 2,000-pounders from B-52 bomber.
8,000 pounds hitting the internet, too, getting more than its weight in views.
That's what I'm talking about. That's eliminating the enemy.
How does it look to the world? Survey says...
In 2009, we began to see signs of the revival of the image of the United States, reflecting confidence in its new president, Barack Obama.
But it turns out confidence is not on the radar.
We got Obama.
Where targets for U.S. rockets are.
As positive as the numbers were in much of the world, there was little indication of a better opinion of the image of the United States in the Muslim world, I'm sorry to say. Opinions in the Middle East remained largely unfavorable.
Yeah, shake it back! Did that not blow your mind?
And strong animosity toward the U.S. continued to run deep and unabated in Turkey and Pakistan, the Palestinian territories.
That just happened.
It's a bad rep that stretches beyond the latest blasts in two wars.
They know that, for example, Palestinians in Gaza, the bombs that fell on Gaza last year were manufactured in the United States. There's no hiding that. And children as young as, you know, preschool age kids know where the F-16s are coming from. In regard to the Arab and Muslim world, people view the United States through the prism of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Few Muslims that we polled last year believe that Obama would be fair-minded with regard to this relationship.
So while U.S. lawmakers are asking this...
Why do you believe that these public opinion numbers have gone up so dramatically? Do you think they can be sustained?
They may want to focus on what that support hinges on, even in countries where the U.S. is popular.
There was support nearly everywhere for closing Guantanamo, withdrawing troops from Iraq, but opposition everywhere to sending more troops to Afghanistan.
None of which are mission accomplished.
There may be some people who initially were very excited about Obama just being elected because he was not Bush, are probably going to see that there is not that much of a difference between American foreign policy today and American foreign policy several years ago.
While U.S. lawmakers and academics hold meetings in Washington to talk about why the U.S. reputation abroad is so important, they seem to be a world away from the drone attacks and the wars and the battlefields that may really be forming it. And looking at where the U.S. is headed, the question is which images are making a bigger impression around the globe now.
All right, time to pack up and f*** these guys up some more.
Lauren Lister, RT.
Let's return to the Heretics Hour, brought to you by VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carolyn Yeager, and I am speaking with Gunter Deckert, the former leader of the NPD, the National Democratic Party in Germany. And we were talking about some holo issues and Bishop Williamson's trial, which Mr. Deckert attended. Well, now we're going to move into, I'm going to ask him to say a few words about the difficulty that is taking place in Germany in getting a memorial built to the German expellees from the East in 1945 and 1946. And the figure of Erika Steinbach, who is a German, who is at the center of this, and very controversial because to the Poles and to the leftists in Germany, she is too right-wing for them. So what do you have to say about this, Gunter?
Yes. First, Frau Steinbach did a good job in trying to have a memorial for the expellees from the East. That is really to be acknowledged. But as she is not right-wing, see it from my point of view, she's center, she's bourgeois, she had to make a lot of concessions to the Poles and even the Jews. And the Jews have seats in this committee because they have got been Jews in Silesia and East Prussia, Western Prussia and Pomerania as well. And has now become a victim of the new coalition. Here in, especially, she has become a victim of the now gay foreign minister, a certain Herr Westerwelle, who is a big friend of the Poles and who has no, let's say, ear, has no sympathy for the victims of the last year coming from the East. And as Frau Merkel, for the time being, needs the liberals to form her government, they did everything possible to fire Frau Steinbach. And thus she has become, let us say, a symbol of the expellees, though, as I put it before, she stopped halfway. She initiated something, put it on the right wheels, but due to political circumstances, couldn't maybe go to the end of what she had planned to.
So what do you see as the future at this point for this so-called memorial? I think it's going to be such a compromised memorial in my point of view. With that, I would rather not see anything and just hold out for the real thing.
Which is important, at least, there will be a kind of memorial. There hasn't been one before. That is important. Mm-hmm. And when, maybe, the circumstances change, you can give this memorial another impact. You can change, let's say, the rules. You can change the materials. You can change the seminars, everything. You can change. But you can say, the good job she did is that we will have a memorial reminding us of the problems of the death and of the expellees of the eastern provinces of the Third German Reich.
Okay, I'm sure you're right about that. I would go along with that. There was a magazine article just recently came along. In fact, it was just in the 21st, April 21st issue of Maclean's Magazine, another Canadian, the leading Canadian magazine. And the cover story was the return of Hitler. I don't want to talk about that story because it's the usual stuff. But they have Hitler on the cover, and then they are talking about these right-wing parties, which have been gaining ground. And they talk a lot about Mein Kampf being sold and popular in various parts of the world. So from that, you know, two of the countries that are really that the leftists are really concerned about and the globalists are Austria and Hungary. So let's start out talking about Austria, because I think people are not quite as familiar with that, and Barbara Rosenkrantz, who is expected to win 20% in this upcoming election, presidential election, which is shocking everyone.
Yes. Austria, though German, is, well, a story apart, because just after the war, the new government succeeded in saying that they had, that Austrians had been the first victim of the German aggression. So Hitler was Austrian of origin. And Barbara Rosenkrantz, well, she is, comes from what they call their far right, which is a liberal far right, which is a difference and not a nationalistic far right, and is sure a personality, has some charm, but she has not enough what they call stature. When she got under attack, she went back. And she even is now in favor of the special Austrian-German law, namely sending someone to prison who demands in a democratic state the reunion with the German Reich. That is a crime in Austria. And she always has to say, well, I'm everything the National has done in Austria, well, was wrong. She, but the leftists and the Jews as well, and some part, some, well, let's say, parts of the bourgeois party, ÖVP, Austrian bourgeois party, put her, in, let's say, in a corner, and she fought back with her back on the wall. And if she will make, if she makes 21%, I'm not sure of it nowadays. The last few days showed that the combined forces of the mainstream media will attacked her consequently, permanently, and put her in the right-wing corner. And thus, I think 20% won't be possible anymore.
Mm.
At first, it seemed that she could even unite all those, let's say, right bourgeois, right-wing nationalists, and all those not satisfied with the now government of Austria that has got the same problems as Germany, Hungary, Britain and France. I mean, still the consequences of the financial crisis, which has become an economic crisis. Mm-hmm. And the now president of Austria, a socialist, will have an easy job. And again, the neighbor country, Hungary, is different. First, ex-communist country, and still cultivating the national, let's say, culture and setting. And even during the communist reign, the nationalists had a strong stand in Hungary. And after the bad politics of the former communist socialist government, and it's mainly its economic, the right-wing parties, first the party of Herr Orban, who's of German origin, and the right-wing party of the Jobbik, got the chance to, let's say, get stature. And the Hungarians think, well, let's give them a chance to see if the Orban party alone, or with the help of the Jobbik party, will be able to overcome the national crisis, problems of the gypsies and Jews as well, but above all, to overcome the economic and financial crisis. And most, a lot of German banks, Austrian banks, British banks, have invested money in Hungary. And you see, the national, let's say, uproar is first linked to the national identity, which is very strong in Hungary, very strong, and the financial and economic crisis. And thus, they got the chance to get the power.
Yes, they play up the that the Jobbik's popularity is because of the anti-Roma attitudes and, this ugly stuff they call. But it has a lot to do with, do you think that when it comes to the Jobbik Party, or as you say, Jobbik, is that pretty much based on immigration and ethnicities and
Sure.
Where they go for, it's more economic.
Yes, let's say the Orbán Party is the two, but the Jobbik Party is sure a nationalist one.
Mm-hmm.
Hungary for the Hungarians, anti-Jewish, anti-Gypsies, and, well, cultivating what Hungary for the Hungarians. And I would say, based to their, let's say, ideology, you can compare it to the party of Le Pen in France, to some extent to the British National Party, to the Vlaams Belang in Belgium, to the NPD or Republikaner in Germany, to the Lega Nord in Italy, and things like that. That is a kind of, let's say, revival of nationalist movements who realize that the globalization, that the European commonwealths is not good for nations, that they lose more and more their sovereignty, they are handled, manipulated, and they want, let's say, Hungary for Hungarians, we can manage our problems on our own, with our own hands. And I think that is a new tendency you may see, you can watch all over Europe. But as to the strengths, it's different from country to country, based to the, let's say, the normal political frames, the normal political situations. They are not the same in every European country.
Do you not include the Austrian Freedom Party as one of these truly nationalist parties? You think it's
No. It's half liberal. It's, firmly you can say, they are greater German parts of it, liberal, bourgeois, and even nationalists. But as a rule, as to my experience of the last 20, 30 years, most of the party members are more liberals than nationalists. But seen from outside, and seen judged by the politics their party makes, it is regarded as a right-wing one because they are against immigration, they are against the European Commonwealths, they are against the giving up of the Austrian Schilling, the corresponding currency of the German Deutschmark, things like that. Seen from the outside, it's right, bourgeois right, but it's not nationalist. But better than bourgeois right than nothing at all.
Yes, exactly. Well, what do you think is the staying power of these parties in this movement right now? Because as you mentioned Le Pen in France, and we know that he was so popular for a while and going very strongly, and now it's just gone. You know, that died off.
Just the opposite. The French had regional elections in March, and it was a kind of renaissance of Le Pen. In the region or the area of Provence, Côte d'Azur, Alpes Côte d'Azur, that's the area, Marseille, Nice, Montreux, Cannes, etc., they reach about 20%.
Oh, I didn't.
Yes, and in the north.
Yes, you're talking about then the southern part of.
And in the north, the daughter of Le Pen, north maybe Calais, Lille, Pas-de-Calais, the north of France, towards Belgium, they made. In this region, now you got France has got reached the former provinces, and North Pas-de-Calais means Normandy, etc. The Le Pen daughter made 18%. They have some strongholds in the German provinces of Alsace. They have now weak regions like now Paris and surrounding, because Paris and surroundings is the main center of immigration, and everywhere in France, well, let's say the autochtones, the normal French, are still very lively. The Le Pen party really lived a renaissance to the surprise of most of the mainstream media. That means immigration was the most important point for the French to vote for Le Pen and his party.
Yeah, that seems to be the issue that people do respond to.
Yeah.
What about then in the Eastern European countries that are always portrayed by we nationalists as being with such strongholds of nationalism? How much truth is there in that? you know, they seem to be sort of schizophrenic. You have that, and then you also have their tremendous cooperation with...
In the former communist occupied states of Eastern, Southeastern, and Northeastern Europe, sure, nationalism leaves every nation quite normal. Before, under the pressure of the Soviets, and now, let's say, finally free. Free, free. And even with all the problems freedom brings with it. And in Bulgaria, Romania, the national parties always made more than 10, 15, up to 20%. Seen at the last European elections, a lot of members were sent to Strasbourg, Brussels, and Luxembourg. And that goes from the Baltic states down to Romania and Bulgaria. But I don't know how long that will last. It's only a question of economy. And as long as those new member states of the European community are dependent on money from Brussels, Strasbourg, and Luxembourg, their policies can be dictated from those globalized centers. Mm-hmm. And it depends of how strong these movements are, even to overcome, let's say, financial problems if they don't get more money from the European community. Think now the case of Greece. They now demand 45 million of euros. That is about, let me say, $60 billion to overcome the actual final problems. And most of this is linked, I would say, to economy, finance, and immigration, sure, as well.
Mm-hmm. This rising tide, how strong do you think it is? Is it something that can really keep moving, or is it going to be restricted to this 20% and not go any further? I mean, yeah, of course you can't tell that, but...
I would say as long as there are still problems of decolonization from the Russian Empire, as long as there are problems of finance and economy, problems of minorities, problems of immigration, true or the real nationalist movements will have a chance to get more and more power. If they are able, if they can reach the final power, let's say, to govern, that I can't say. I hope so, but I don't know. I am not a visionary.
Well, what about in Germany now? You told me about an election coming up largest German state. Tell us about that.
Yes, it's not a state. We call it Bundesland. It's a kind of big province. It's North, not Rhine-Westphalia, or in English, North Rhine-Westphalia, Cologne, Bonn, the basin of the Ruhr, the center of the German world steel and coal industries. And there, in this area, at this between Rhine and Ruhr in northwest of Germany, live 30 million people. Well, it's the densely populated area in the smaller Germany of today. In power, actually, is a coalition government formed by the Christian Democrats and the Liberals. But as the Liberals have a decline since the last national election, it is, well, an open battle for the moment that this bourgeois government will stay in power after May 9th. And the, let's say, the right-wing parties or nationalist parties, there are two in the ring, I would call it, namely the National Democratic Party, NPD, and a new formation formed by former Republicaners, formed by former NPD and CDU and other bourgeois members, is pro-NRW, pro in favor of North Rhine-Westphalia. And actually, as if the statistics, the polls are right, these two parties will gain between 5 and 7%. And every time that the bourgeois or the center in Germany is in the danger of losing a battle, the Germans tend, well, unfortunately, to assist to vote for center, let's say, the bourgeois parties. And the right-wing parties and movements have got no chance. That is
they're afraid that they're going to go to some extreme.
Yeah.
They're so afraid of that.
Yeah. And that is only what they call is a consequence of this manipulation of history, this steady guilt complex. If you vote right wing, you vote Hitler. You vote Auschwitz. You vote concentration camp. That is in the heads of the Germans, and the mainstream media always cultivate that feeling, that sentiment. And it, what will the foreign country say? What will Obama say? What will Brown say if he votes right wing? Impossible. The Americans won't come anymore to Germany. They won't get their money, their dollars out of Germany. They won't buy any German cars. No more Mercedes on American motorways or things like that. There's several that is not reasonable. That is, well, I would say, a kind of ideology, and the Germans react like the dogs of Pavlov.
Yes. Well, what final words do you have? Because we don't have too much time. Yeah. Is there anything that you'd particularly like to share with us?
Well, the problem is, to us, the war in Afghanistan, which now is accepted by the government as a war and not as a kind of, let's say, civil action to bring democracy, money, and chocolate to the Afghan people. And the more German soldiers, I would say they're not soldiers, they are, well, they are paid for that. They get double their salary. Die there, the earlier the Germans will get home. And it is crazy, when killing, doesn't matter Germans or British or Americans, do kill civilians, at the same time, they create new terrorists.
Even if
they pay for the debt, not a dead Afghan, well, actually is about worth, I think, 50,000 euros. It's even now a kind of, let's say, business, a dealing. How many will have Germany to pay, France to pay, England to pay, and Britain to pay? And that is important because the population doesn't accept anymore that our freedom, it is defended at the Hindu Kush. Though most of Germans don't know where the Hindu Kush is, even those who are in favor of this, let's say, invasion. And that will decide, I think, even this regional election at Nordrhein-Westfalen on May 9th, that we have nothing to do there. Let's say, some time ago, the German soldiers were murderers, the concentration camp guards, killing Jews, killing Poles, killing Russians, etc. And now they fight everywhere in the world, as the more, let's say, as a second army of the Americans, at Somalia, Lebanon, Iraq, we only pay for that. Afghan, we have soldiers there, which is crazy. I think that would be a very, very important problem of the interior policy of Germany in the month to come.
Why do Germans like Obama so much? They're crazy about Obama.
Oh, do ask me a question which is a bit easier. Well, because, yes, we can. He was here described and presented, and I'd say even sold, as the new Messias.
Oh, well, really? The American, new Messiah?
Yeah, sure. You know, Messiah. Say,
well, yes, I, you know, when I was there, I talked to some Germans, and they talked
after
just
the boy
like
said,
that. They
yes.
thought that. They said, he's going to end the war. Yeah.
The states in, let's say, the German culture always stood for freedom. Let's say, liberty. Everybody gets the chance to get up. Well, being only an assistant in a shop and become the manager of the whole business. And it was a kind of, we call it, ein verklärtes, an image of the states that didn't correspond to reality. And
well, do you think I have to ask you here? Because do you think that right wing critics of Germany will say about this love of Obama, the Messiah, and so on, that this is the German character they want? This great leader makes them think of Adolf Hitler. What do you answer to that?
Well, let even some bourgeois media said, well, Obama is only a puppet. As a friend of mine, an American living in Tennessee, puts it, it doesn't matter who is the front man, the person behind are always the same. You understand?
Yes, yes.
And he's a puppet. Yes, he's a front man, and his chance was to be a half caste. Now it's a title to have half caste president, but the person around him choose with double citizenship, American one and Israeli one. Well, nothing has changed.
Yes. All right, Gunter, I want to thank you so much. This has been a very interesting program. I'm sure everyone thinks so, and I appreciate your coming on. We have absolutely run out of time. I'm going to have to say good night, so I say good night to you, and thank you again, and good night to the listeners. We'll see you next week.
Good night to all of you.
Thanks for listening. The Heretics Hour returns Monday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.